My name, like she said, is Michelle Radomski. I'm a nurse manager at St. Louis Children's Hospital, and I work in our community outreach department in a program called Healthy Kids Express. Healthy Kids Express is actually three separate teams of people, and each team provides a specific service to children in the St. Louis area who are in need. So all of our services are free of charge. We have an asthma van, we have a dental van, and we have a screening and immunization van. Today I'm going to talk about our immunization program and specifically the immunizations that we provide to the refugees who newly arrived to St. Louis. The majority of our routine immunizations are provided to this group, this population. I have no relationships to disclose. And in my presentation, I'll discuss solutions to decrease some of the barriers that refugees face when receiving immunizations. And I'll also explain how increasing partnerships can help with some of the financial and communication challenges both the refugees have as well as the medical providers. Sorry, that kind of moved. I'd like to give you an overview first of the immigrant and refugee population we have in St. Louis. Missouri is 10th in the nation for free case refugee resettlement. So we're kind of right there. We don't have tons, but you know we're up there. 85% of all new refugees who are sent to Missouri are initially settled in the St. Louis region. The most important thing on that slide, though, is really that St. Louis City is the third in the nation for the degree of diversity of the new refugee arrivals. And that is what really changed in the St. Louis area over the last 5 to 6 years. And that alone forced us to change how we were providing our services to the refugee and immigrant population. Basically, at that time, around 5 years ago, we saw many more refugees come. But at that time, they were so diverse. They were diverse in the countries they came from, as well as the language they spoke, as well as their education level. Prior to that time, our service model was basically anytime we would go out and provide immunizations, we would bring an interpreter with us or have the site coordinate an interpreter to help us communicate with the families. And that was fine when we had specific groups of refugees. We'd bring an interpreter who worked well with the Hispanic population. Another interpreter worked well with the Vietnamese population that we had a large group of. And then more recently, it was the Bosnian population. But around 2008, 2009, we were getting families from all over the place, and we couldn't keep up with it. We got families from Africa. There were families from who spoke Burmese and three different dialects. We were just inundated with the number of different languages. We couldn't even keep them all straight. Like, we got used to the ones who spoke Karen, and then all of a sudden there was a new dialect, Kareni, and it was like we were just overwhelmed. So as medical providers, we were overwhelmed. The Refugee Resettlement Office was overwhelmed, but also the City of St. Louis School District was overwhelmed. Currently, they have 76 different languages in their school district alone. And at the same time all this was happening, it's the same time the economy dropped. So budgets were cut, you know, and people were really struggling to meet all the demands. Also, if you keep in the back of your mind how Missouri had done in the past with immunizations, in 2009, basically in that 19 to 35 month age group, nationally, immunization rates were at 71%. Missouri, however, was only at 56%. So here we had horrible immunization rates, and then you combine that with so many different families and the refugee population, and we were almost like destined to fail. And we knew that we needed to provide services in a different type of way. So that's when we started looking at the barriers. I have a little sound clip that I'm going to play, and that she's going to help me. I love it. And it's a man who came from Ethiopia, and this sound clip actually aired in March of 2012.
that before the morning I crossed the border to the Sudan, there were three of us. And we shared a cup of bread for food. And that was a nice thing we had. But all through there was a civil war, there was a Marxist government, and of course there was no longer actually winter was so rough. People were fleeing and everywhere they can get out. And I remember there was also the crowd that actually give me a sense of when we point that here, of what it was like. Did you speak any English at all?
Yes, yes, I had many years of practice education at that time.
The first shock was I came in the summer. For citizen government, 46 degrees Celsius, about 110 degrees to the Sudan, and I came here to like 25, completely dressed out of season, afraid to organize. That was one, and the second thing was did you have any prospects at all? I mean, here you are all of a sudden in this community. You've got to eat, you've got to live, you've got to work.
There was something in us that
I don't know how to explain. There was a determination to make something happen. Because we have no way, we have no plan. Either this or so we had this bright light ahead of us, and it was the only way, and we don't have any choices, and you have to make it work.
When you came to the same place, did we receive a food stamp and a contemporary for family of four? We received $24 a month, and we received the portion of money, which was $24 a month, and that helped. Lasted for 6 months. After 6 months, we bought that out. So this is exactly what the United States of America government provided to buy the refugees. I know for this person for program.
When refugees first arrive, the first 8 months after they arrive in the community, they're eligible for Medicaid. And through that, then we can go ahead and address some of these medical issues that they arrive with. But after that, then they're no longer eligible. They would have to leave the same country, right? So like you're anybody else in the community. So we need to be able to address medical issues very quickly to be able to solve these problems.
So that gives you a little taste of how they feel when they first come over. Hold on a second. Oh, I think I'm right here. And if you just think of their basic needs, like just basically getting them food, I've heard many stories from the refugees. They go to this grocery store and they're just overwhelmed. I heard a man say he literally cried when he was trying to pick out cereal. Not always for pure joy that there's so much, but pure confusion. And I could really understand that with, this is my first APH conference. And is it anybody else's first besides mine? Well, just when I looked at this book and had to figure out where I was going to go, I was completely overwhelmed. I'm worn out today after a few days. This has been overwhelming. So if they've been, you know, they've came here, not always by choice, but then they're put in a strange land and just overwhelming amount of information at one time. Just even trying to, you know, like, they can get the food, but the water, like one man told me, he had never seen a shower. They don't understand always how to use the toilet. At our international institute, at the refugee resettlement office, there's pictures all over the place, like what to do. This is the toilet. You need to flush it, things like that. So just so much all at one time. When we look at the safety needs, as the man said, they get a very small amount of money, and that goes to rent. Sometimes they have to pay the airfare from their trip over back, so they're very limited. Also, you heard about the Medicaid. They have that only for a short period of time, and that's where it became very important for us to come in and help them while they're waiting to get hooked up with a primary care physician. The other thing is some of these people have never seen a doctor or a nurse. There might be, if they were from Africa, there might be one doctor or one nurse per 2,000, 3,000 people, and unless they were very, very ill, they've never seen anybody. Transportation is extremely difficult for them. Many of them cannot even communicate where their house is at and describe where they live, and to ask them to take several different bus lines to get to a primary care office is extremely difficult when they're first here. We even talked to some of the families after they've been here a year, and it's still very difficult to navigate in St. Louis because it's very decentralized. With the social and emotional needs, the communication is one of the hardest areas for them. And just really building up that trust relationship. By the time they come here, they don't trust anybody. And if you heard the man talk, so many people are faced with you either flee or you die, you escape or you face persecution. So we've got that mindset, and then we're trying to help them. We've given them 500 million choices, and then we're trying to introduce them to our health care. And in here, we want to give them informed consent. But some of them have no idea what our health even means. It's a whole different worldview of health. So that alone is so hard and so challenging for both them and for us as a medical provider, and to really start building that trust. And then, you know, we want to get them to where they're self-sufficient and they can have citizenship and apply for that. But in order for them to do that, it's like they have very limited time. The clock is ticking for them. And basically, it's like if the kids are not immunized, they're not going to be able to go to school. If the kids don't go to school, the parents are still there with them, and they're unable to find work. So it's like one thing leads into another, and it was crucial for us to help early on in order to help them reach that self-sufficiency. Some of the solutions that we found were pretty much already there, but it was making sure that they were followed through and making sure the right person did it. The Refugee Resettlement Office that we work with is International Institute, and that seemed like the perfect place to keep the immunizations there at least initially. They had already built some type of relationship with them and built that trust because they were the same people who were helping them set up housing, teaching them English, and helping them find jobs. Also, it eliminated the transportation barriers initially until they could learn to navigate St. Louis. It at least was the same office and it was one place that they were somewhat familiar with going. The case managers there are excellent. They've built a one-on-one relationship with them. But the difficulty was the case managers were not medically educated on immunizations or so many other things. So there was a gap there with the medical information. The other thing is, at least at International Institute, if there were families who had came from their same country earlier than them, they could truly help the family feel a little more comfortable, teach them who they could trust and who they couldn't trust, and really network with each other. In order to decrease some of the language barriers, we felt it was super important that they have culturally and medically appropriate interpretive services. In the past, we had always felt comfortable with somebody who's just maybe an interpreter. But as we got more and more people from different countries, it was very, very important that they were able to speak to somebody who also translated both the medical information we wanted to give them, but the cultural information and how it would be important for them. And really, when we started working with the families, we had to do an assessment on the family to even see if they understood what health meant or what their understanding of health was. After we do that, we'd also try to find out their understanding of immunizations. Even in countries like Iraq, where they provide many immunizations, a lot of the families really never had a good grasp of what immunizations do. So that's one of our first questions that we ask to the family is, what is your understanding of immunizations? And many have no idea. And we have to kind of even, we can't even say it in that way. It's kind of like, has your child ever received a shot? And we show them pictures to see if they have a baseline. But we always try to compare it to something that they are familiar with. And the house analogy works really well. We talk about how the house protects them from the weather and sometimes strangers. And no different than they wouldn't open their door to a complete stranger. They would open it maybe slightly to see who's out there and protect themselves, or they peek out their window. We use that idea with immunizations also. The immunizations are there to protect your body, and we may give a little small dose, no different than opening up that door, very little. We give a little small dose to protect the body and kind of wake up the body so that it can fight these diseases and germs. So we're always trying to relate it in something that's very familiar for them. In helping them decrease the barriers, we had to increase our partnerships and see who was out there to provide, who could provide what service. And building the partnerships and the communication was the most difficult piece for everybody involved. And with that, we knew that it was so very difficult to get so many different types of interpreters. We worked with our partner agency at BJC Refugee Health, and BJC is the hospital corporation that we work for. And that's when we really started doing the phone interpretation, and that we could have immediate interpreters over the phone in many, many different languages. But with that came the challenge of the finances. So has anybody used phone interpretation, and do you know how expensive is it for you? Very expensive. It's $1.37 a minute, and usually with each family, we spend at least 30 minutes on the phone. But the nice thing about that is it's quick and immediate, and it truly helps the families. So we had to find some partner out there who would help us with that because we didn't have the finances. The other thing was really determining who could do what and how much they could do. And looking at, like, International Institute could offer us the space for providing the immunizations to deal with large groups of families. We would immunize over 50 kids there per day. However, we needed a room to accommodate the multiple families. And there was sometimes over 100 families in one large room. Also, we needed to look at the logistics and strive for consistency. We had to really define who would do what and how much they could do. We had partners in the school district that could provide immunizations, but they didn't have the families there, and they were limited on how many kids they can immunize. We only had a certain budget and a certain amount of nurses, so we knew that we can only immunize probably anywhere up to 50, maybe 60 kids a month. But that was it, that we were at our capacity. So really it was kind of, you know, figuring out who could do what, how much they could do, and what type of communication we needed. We also wanted to minimize that silo effect. In the past, we had certain medical providers who did great with the Hispanic population or did great with this, and we had to really cut back on those silos and say, no more, we've got to help provide these services to these people, no matter if they're from a different culture. The other thing is safety concerns. We were very concerned about providing immunizations to children that we didn't know their medical background. So we elaborated on the screening questionnaire, and we really went through each question and asked it more specifically to the family in terms that they were more familiar with. We couldn't ask the question, has your child ever had a serious reaction to immunizations, because that means nothing to them. So if we found out they had immunizations in the past, we would say, did your child ever had a high fever? Were they very hot? Did they ever have a rash or large welt over their body? So we really had to change our whole way in communicating with the family so that it made sense. And after we did this and we looked at each partner, we really have a well-run system. As you can see, the refugee family is in the middle. And all the services revolve around that family. They started in the National Institute. They provide them with the caseworkers. We get support from vaccines for children. We could not do it if we did not get the vaccines for free. The Department of Health, the CDC, and their VIS sheets. We can't assume, though, that the families can read. We also use the state vaccine registry to make sure that we're not over-immunizing or under-immunizing anybody. We put all our vaccines in there within 24 hours of giving them, and all of our partners do the same thing so that we all have that available, and everybody knows what the other person gave. We also work closely with the local school district, and we have it set up. If the child comes the first 2 weeks of the month, we immunize them. They cover the children who are here the last 2 weeks of the month. And both of us cover the children until they're hooked up with a primary care provider. Once they're hooked up with a primary care provider, then we step back or they go there. So we're just really kind of doing it until they get hooked up. And the other one is BJC, Refugee Help. They were the ones who really trained us extensively on how to work with interpreters, how to work with phone interpretation, how to be more culturally sensitive. And they are also the ones who help support us financially with the certified interpreters. And then our group is the Healthy Kids Express. And basically, we saw benefits other than the intentional benefits of preventing disease in these children, getting these kids into school faster, decreasing the lag time for them to receive immunizations, and really helping the parents reach self-sufficiency. We also found that we could use this same model to provide other services. For example, we provide our dental services the same way. And we also found that we increase the health literacy of the families by really helping them understand what health here is in the United States and helping them navigate the system. Because even when we're not involved, they know that they can call us and we'll help them show the way to the different federally qualified health centers or other providers in the communities. For the families, it was wonderful. It was kind of like we get overwhelmed with the number of people are there, but many times they help each other. We don't use the families for interpretation, but they want to help, so we let them help us when we need to know the address or the phone number or things like that. And then we go to the true consenting part, we use the certified interpreters. We also, being Children's Hospital, we receive tons of donations. So when they come and get immunized with us, they walk away with a huge bag of clothes, hats, school things, and everything like that. So the families, you know, the kids get, we do simultaneous immunizations. So some of the kids get as many as 6 shots, but they leave smiling because they get this little bag of goodies. So basically, you know, we found it works well. It's wonderful collaboration between us, the school district, the Department of Health, even the primary care physicians. They're happy that we've at least started the process for them. And we enjoy expanding this program to other things other than just immunizations, dental services, and other areas to communicate with them. So, does anybody have any questions?
Well, first of all, thank you for an excellent presentation. That was really excellent. My question has to do with the record keeping. You know, with all of the folks coming in and different nationalities and everything, that would seem to present a real problem to keeping the state registry straight and being able to pull people back up.
Record keeping is extremely difficult. So that's an excellent question. We use it, and most of the agencies we work with use it. Not all the primary care physicians use it. Not all of our community health centers use it. But in addition to that, we have an Excel record that we send out before the kids come the St. Louis Public School nurses, as well as the International Institute, as well as anybody else who provides a large amount of immunizations. So we push that out to an email to probably 10 other people. And then we say, have you seen any of these kids? Have you immunized any of them? And if not, we're going to go ahead. Then within 24 hours after we immunize the children, we send that back out again and say, these are the kids that we've done. Because what we found when we first started is many of the families were confused, and they'd have that blue card, and they'd come back for immunization the next month, and they either wouldn't have it or they'd have three blue cards, and they went from this provider to this provider, and they never understood that they shouldn't do it. So that's part of our education to the family the first time that they come. We explain the blue card. We are like, you bring this anytime you go to a medical appointment. You keep this blue card. You will keep it for your children to go to school, to college, you know, trying to reemphasize. Also, the difference we do versus some of the other places is we do that interpretive services and informed consent every single time they come. And we notice a huge difference from the first time they come to the fourth visit. Each time they've learned more and they answer the questions so much better. So some of the other providers, like the city school system, they do a one-time blanket consent. And after that, they immunize without the parents. And that was something that we wouldn't do because, first of all, we don't know how they did with the immunizations, if they had a reaction. And then the other thing is, that's not fair to the family, especially that first visit. They're so shocked and confused that there's a huge learning curve to the fourth visit. Also, our compliance rates for return are high, very, very high. So we're very pleased about that. They get their whole series a lot of times with us, which is excellent.
Okay. Thank you very much.